Hello, this is Walter Latham, and I'm the host of the Walt Weekly Podcast. And I have with me today Keena Parham, our co-host, and Bridget Stokes, also our co-host. And we have a very special guest in the house, Ms. Denise Phillips, founder of Black Love in Charlotte, North Carolina. Deborah Harrell, morning today, Ms. Phillips.
I'm wonderful today, enjoying this Carolina sunshine.
All righty. Deborah Phillips and her organization, Black Love Charlotte, was founded over 7 years ago to help those experiencing homelessness in and around the city of Charlotte, and has helped make a major difference during the COVID-19 pandemic. Deborah pours her soul into the work she does daily. Right, after working 23 years in the information technology space, this mother of three and domestic abuse survivor has stepped into her God-given assignment to help those who need a hand, whether homeless or not. In mid-May of 2020, at the height of the pandemic, Deborah quit her job at a law firm and fully dedicated all her time to her organization and to those she refers to as her Black family. So, Deborah, tell us a little bit about yourself. And again, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Once again, my name is Deborah Phillips. I'm the founder and executive director of Black Love Charlotte. I serve every single day along with my team in what we call the houseless community. We serve meals every day, and we also serve tents, tarps, sleeping bags. We provide hygiene products, clothing, anything that you would need in your daily life, we provide to our neighbors. It's for us, it really is about just doing the right thing in the community and making sure that our community needs are met.
Can you share with us the moment that sparked the creation of Black Love Charlotte and what motivated you to focus on helping the homeless community?
Really, the moment for me became when I was going through a separation and divorce in 2016. I just asked God to do something different with me. I wanted to make sure that I was being used and not falling back into old ways. And God just showed me to not focus on what I was going through, especially with my kids, but to take what I was going through and turn that focus to doing something for somebody other than myself. That was that moment for me. So me and my kids at the time, we were literally shopping and buying our groceries in the Dollar Tree. And I would go to work every day and see some of the same people at, you know, Uptown is what we have in Charlotte. We don't have a downtown. We have an Uptown. And I would see the same people either sleeping on a bench, flying their signs, meaning they were asking for some type of money or funds. And I was like, hey, how can I help you? I didn't want to assume they needed money. I didn't want to assume they needed a meal. I wanted to know how I could help. And it was anything from someone needing some hair products. She was wanting some Black hair care products. So I had some extras at the house and I bought those to her. Another individual wanted a cart because they said it was a 2 mile walk to the grocery store there and back. And I had a cart that my daughter was no longer using. She used for track. We provided that. And then out of our grocery budget, which at the time was only $60 a week, me and my kids would take 20 of that 60 that we were already using to shop out of the Dollar Tree for groceries. And we would actually buy additional items like Pop Top canned food items, tuna, a loaf of bread, additional sliced meat. We would make sandwiches. We get little snack packs and we would provide that, you know, to our neighbors. I would go into work and I would have an extra sandwich or two to give to somebody. And that's when I realized, God, I can do this. This is so simple and easy to do something for somebody other than myself. And so that's when Black Love pretty much was birthed.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. You know, you had 23 years in IT, right? And Keena and I both came from the IT space. You know, we were certified project managers. You know, I don't want to talk about myself. You know, I've done a lot of projects, but I'm very familiar with IT. What did you do in IT, by the way?
So I started out in the field of build and design with a lot of the computer systems. And this was before everybody was talking about apps. Getting into that space. And then I had started to do help desk work. And then I grew from there to project coordinator to being a help desk manager. I'm setting up a help desk at a major medical center in Durham And then I moved to the Charlotte area, continue my work as a team lead, a technical analyst. And then lastly, I was working at a law firm supporting their systems. But I've done a lot of things from IT to from IT security to break fix, end user support. Okay. If it was thought of, I was able to do it.
Excellent. I know when I was working as a project manager, I did some major projects. Anyway, during the first team meeting, where you introduce yourself? And I would start talking and I would say, I got a degree. I got a bachelor's degree. I got a master's degree. I'm a PMP. I was a VP of operations. I was head of this department, head of that. And they said, oh, that's enough. Did you have that problem at any time? Even though it's a little bit off track, when you mention IT, it just gets me going.
You are a male. I was a black female in the business of IT. So a lot of times me just entering a room was not a comfortable space for me. And that was for many years. Just being in that room, being a female, being black, and being able to do what I do, I realized I offended many, but I knew my stuff and nobody could take that away from me. I said, no degree could speak, because a lot of times they wanted those certifications. So I had my certifications and made sure that I stayed on top of my game when I entered those rooms. But a lot of times they wanted me somewhere in a corner, quiet. So it was not always a comfortable environment. And I worked anywhere from IBM to, like I said, major medical centers to even some major law firms. It just was not always an easy space for me, but I kept my footing and I said, I shall not be moved.
Excellent. And you've been out of that for how long?
I left that environment in May of 2020.
Okay. So I've got 23 years now, and as of this year, and I know exactly what you're talking about, even though you're definitely on the technical side of the house and I'm on the project and program management side of the house. I know exactly what you're talking about when, especially back in the early 2000s, you didn't see us at all. You didn't see us complexion wise, let alone did you see us as women in the space. So I'm very happy where we are today, where you have a lot of people of color and women who are black. That are in the technical spaces. So I definitely, your words are received. I feel the pain.
Yes, absolutely.
Yep. I think with diversity and inclusion has really made a space for us, especially in technology. I recently spoke about what I do for Block Love Charlotte with Credit Karma. And at the time they were doing a diversity and inclusion workshop. But it was all people with an IT background. It was just amazing to be in that space and see so many people of color, because I did not see that in my 23 years. It was very rare. The last company that I worked for, I was the only black. I was the only female. So seeing now some of us in the room and being used in some powerful ways, making a difference, to see the chief information officer be somebody of color, that's just beautiful as looking at how far we've come.
I have not seen that one yet, but not to fully go off topic. Yeah, not to fully go.
I work with some major players like Deutsche Bank, Bank of New York.
Well, that's why
I go on and on.
That's why we know the major players don't have them yet. But
yeah, I was the only one.
There's a group called a page called Afrotech, and I was on IG yesterday, and so it's pretty much people of color in technology positions, and they have various conferences. But yesterday there was a post that said, they was talking about, do you know the difference between project management, program management, and product management, right? And looking at all of the different responses, the hundreds of responses by people of color, I was like, oh my God, there's my tribe,
we don't
see it, and of course it's people from all over the world, but when you go into an office every day, we don't see it. We still don't see it really.
Okay.
But anyway.
All right. So we got off topic a little bit because, we're very interested in technology. You got two PMs here. Tina's also a project manager, program manager. And I'm a operations guy, and I am a project manager. So I face off the IT on behalf. I used to face off the IT on behalf of funds transfer or whatever department that the business side. Okay. So anyway, that's neither here nor there, because I want to get back to blockchain and what you're doing, which, reading your information, I was very, very pleased and happy. And only thing I can say, I'm just very proud of you, what you're doing. Talk a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about it, because that's what the show is about. And the people that are down and out. You know, I've been there. So, you know, I used to sleep in Port Authority, believe it or not. The bus station when I first came to New York. So I know how hardship is. But I always had a job. That was the difference between me and the guy, homeless guy on the street. Okay?
No difference.
So anyway, no difference, right?
I tell people, no difference. I mean, that's one of the things why, and it actually was a good segue talking about IT, because, and also, you know, finding your tribe, finding your space, because a lot of those that we serve look just like us. You know, I don't know where we get this misconception that when I think of how some people perceive homelessness, I still think they think of hobos. You know, somebody walking around who's, you know, scraggly, white, long, they're white and their beard is all long and they're carrying a sack behind them. That's not what it is. You get out to the block and you see people that look just like you and me, people that work in IT, people that have degrees, people that have doctorates, falling on hard times. Schizophrenia has kicked in. They're no longer on their mental health medication. They may have had trauma that has sent them there. People don't realize how much those we serve look like us, have good backgrounds, have work, or still do work. You're talking about sleeping in Port Authority. We are right now in the city of Charlotte arguing about neighbors that are feeling safe sleeping in the airport. And the airport has now devised a plan to have the police department pick those up, you know, pick those neighbors up that feel like, hey, I'm safer here at the airport than I am on the street. And city council is like, oh, this is such a problem. We've got visitors coming into the city of Charlotte. We're now building this major hub. They shouldn't be looking at homeless people the first time they enter into our city. How unfair is that? Our neighbors are our citizens. Our neighbors are just like you and me. And if you're going to criminalize them, what bigger problem are you creating? Instead of putting that money to criminalizing them, how about you put that into housing? But I can go on that. You know, is one of the reasons that Block Love Charlotte consistently fights and advocates for our neighbors. We're not just out here serving meals and having fun. If you look on our social media pages, we always smiling. But man, it's a lot behind that smile. It's a lot that goes on a day-to-day basis. During 2020, the pandemic hit. I had filed for my nonprofit status January 3rd of 2020, not knowing anything about the pandemic. I think the farther north knew about it than we did down here in the Carolinas. You know, folks had us believing you just breathe on somebody and you pass out and die. Nobody gave us any education. Nobody told us anything. They just closed everything up and told folks to stay at home. Well, guess what? Houseless people have nowhere to go.
Yeah, they didn't have remote capabilities.
They weren't educated on what to do. Down here in Charlotte, quite a few of them were given a tent, tarp, and sleeping bag and were asked to camp around the services. A lot of the nonprofits that would normally serve shuttered their doors, which is rightfully so for precaution's sake and safety's sake. But for me, I said, God, I got to be, hunger doesn't stop. I got to be where your people are. Where are you sending me today? I asked my team, are y'all crazy enough to get out here with me? We had to get a letter of permission to even be on the streets. Y'all remember that? If you weren't essential staff, you had to have permission, at least in North Carolina, to be on the streets. So we had
this
a letter.
During the pandemic, right?
Yep, during the pandemic. And we hit those streets. We started serving three times a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Mind you, my job had me remote, but I was still working every single day, trying to make things happen, make sure everybody ate. We were picking up not necessarily groceries, but like food boxes, anything that we could get to people that needed anything. They could be elderly, but I understood the fear. And I said, they shouldn't have to leave their homes. We masked up. And y'all, at this time, we didn't even have masks. Somebody showed us a YouTube video, several YouTube videos on how to make masks. One of our guys actually used a pair of boxes. They were clean. But he showed us how to fold them and put them over our heads. And I said, brother, you can have those. I'm going to, you know, I took socks and we tied string. We put holes in each end, tied strings, and we made masks. Wow. You know, we were already using gloves for serving, but gloves before the pandemic cost us about $11 a box. pandemic hit, those packs of gloves went one point at $43 all the way up to $60-something a box for a pair of gloves. Wow. But we had to keep our staff safe. We had to keep our neighbors safe. And we got in these streets and we served. We did not stop. We did not take time to think about it. We, you know, it was like, if you did not feel safe, don't come out with us. But nobody had anything to do. So on top of us feeding people, we created community, a beautiful, amazing community of volunteers and believers in our mission. I was telling somebody earlier today, people were like, how did you get donations? Porch pickups. We pretty much thrived and survived off of social media because we told people what that need was and they would inbox us and say, here, I have these items on my porch, anywhere from brand new underwear, deodorant, toothpaste, tents, tarps, sleeping bags, socks, whatever our neighbors needed. The citizens of the city would put that on their porch and we would come and pick it up and we would get it out to the streets. And we are not a major operation. We're not even a big team. We just know people believed in us and we made it happen. I'm telling y'all, we did not have time to think twice about what we were doing. Once we were able to pull up information, we were the ones that educated our house's neighbors. We let them know what COVID was. When testing became available, we got the teams to them to make sure that they were tested. Then we were able to get with the health department and get people eventually vaccinated before they were offered a $25 or $100 gift card. We had them put our neighbors first. When we started not just doing this work through the pandemic, but at the beginning, when we learned of the pandemic, we had 12 young ladies pregnant at one time, houseless, because see, we went into the camps. We went nowhere nobody else would go. When you last time you see some Black folks going through camps and you thinking you down in the jungle, baby, you right here in the city, boots on the ground. I dislike that term because so many folks use it and they boots are clean and shiny. My crops, as I say, are dirty. You know, that's I keep cool. My Crocs in sports mode. You know, I've gone through so many pairs of Uggs because we're running through the woods. You know, we're getting bit by mosquitoes and everything else. We're looking for snakes and anything else. But that's what our neighbors have to go through in order to just use the bathroom.
What do you mean when you say camps? Because I'm listening to you. And, you know, I'm from New York. So I've lived in Georgia before, but then kind of ran back to New York. But when you say camps, can you help myself and the listeners understand what you mean in detail by camps?
So I'm going to break it down. You've seen tents and stuff under bridges, right?
Yes.
That's a camp. Doesn't have to be in the woods.
Okay.
But if you see, and a lot of people like to put a definition on it. I think HUD has its own definition. But if it's anybody that's got that tent propped up, usually 1 to 2 people can make a camp. Camps can be up to 60 or 70 people. We
kind of like Skid Row.
Yeah, we ended up here in the city of Charlotte with what was called a tent city. We had over 250 people in what was called a tent city.
Wow.
It was something to see because Charlotte took the time to complain, but not the time to act.
No solution.
And it was... Yeah. But we were out there, you know, we were determined to serve, to get people connected to services. We bought services to the streets, which was something that really wasn't being done. COVID helped that. COVID shined a very bright light on the disparities that our house's neighbors were seeing. You know, a lot of people feel like, hey, if I go sit down in services, I walk in the room and I already am re-traumatized. Because that room reminds them of jail. That room reminds them of some of the services that have judged them, stigmatized them, or denied them. So it becomes hard to trust. And for Black Love Charlotte, our goal is always to gain the trust of those that we serve so they will in turn trust the resources that are available. But that trust has been, it's been a journey to rebuild in the house's community. So we said, you know what? Don't y'all worry about it. We're going to bring services to the streets. So we had people helping us get individuals with ID, get individuals' IDs, because if you all don't know, in North Carolina, you have to have a valid ID in order to sign a lease. That was a huge barrier for our neighbors. So we had to work with organizations that would help us provide IDs. you all know we were in election season during COVID, right?
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. You can't vote without an ID, valid ID they want, you know?
That was a game changer for the houseless community. We kicked back a little bit, but then we thought about it. Okay, if they're going to be required to have ID, you got to move all these roadblocks and barriers. You got to simplify this process. And guess what? North Carolina was required to simplify that process. So we had attorneys and organizations that were receiving some funding to help with voter IDs that were able to get our neighbors the IDs they needed to in order to go into housing. And it really was a game changer, because some people had not had. One guy, y'all, I'm telling you, he broke down in tears when he got his ID. He was like, I had my ID since I was 16 and had a driver's license. This guy, we're looking at you 50 years old.
Did you, since it sounds like the presence of your organization became something I guess they couldn't ignore, were there any services from like the local towns, cities, or counties?
In 2020, it was rough because I had always remained quiet and just worked on solutions. But with COVID, I had to address city. I had to address county. One of the biggest things that we started out addressing was the fact that there was nowhere safe for our neighbors to use the bathroom. Normally, a lot of them in the uptown area would use the library, but the library was closed. And then the other building was actually homeless and veteran services. They were actually closed because those services were moving out and going on somewhere else.
I
said, listen, it's one thing to have to go to the bathroom at night in the dark. But imagine being a woman trying to do that. And then, you know, you have your monthly cycle and everything else. You all are going to have to provide a solution. So there was this kind of pull and push with getting the request for porta-johns out there. And no, that was not the responsibility of my organization to raise funds or to maintain those restrooms, because we went back to some of the guidelines that were in place for COVID and from the CDC. It was like, no, you all are responsible for providing these bathrooms and making sure that our neighbors had somewhere to safely use the bathroom. And I believe porta-johns were there and they showed up and they were put throughout the city, even in some of the heavier camp areas. And they included hand sanitizing stations. They were there, we were doing good, and then in a moment, they were gone again. Unbeknownst to me, the city and county were in this argument about who should clean them. So here I go back again. 9 times out of 10, I try to do it across social media, but every now and then a news reporter would catch me, and my mouth is not always set up perfectly. So it's just like, listen, if we're going to take on this argument, you know, I'm going to have somebody right there on your porch. So you got a choice. You're going to make sure that our neighbors have somewhere safely to utilize the restroom. And so those reappeared and they stayed there throughout the entirety of the height of the pandemic. And so we were very gracious for that. But also in that, it did bring us to the forefront, Kina, in a good way, in a positive way. And so we got on the radar of mostly the county. And right now, we have just sealed and finalized our contract with the county. We've received funding from the city, and in the area that I'm sitting in, though you all cannot see it, we are opening up a one-of-a-kind day service center. And now the city and county have both provided funding for that.
Excellent. Excellent. So I'm very happy. I'm surprised. You know, North Carolina is very, how would you say, very, very conservative. And they have no empathy, some of them, not all. You have empathy, so you can put yourself in other people's situation. Now, I was down in Charlotte. I worked down there 18 months for Wells Fargo on assignment, and we were at, what is it, White Horse Road, at the CIC, all right? And I stayed at, off of Tryon, up near the racetrack. I don't know what area you call that. It's North Charlotte, that's the only thing I know. All right. And Tryon Avenue just runs straight through, right? Is that the one that runs straight through all the way down to uptown?
That's it. Yeah, we serve off in North Tryon every evening.
Ah, okay. So you have one, do you have various outlets where people can, you know, obtain assistance, or do they have to come to one spot that you have set up?
So quite honestly, we have always been in the streets. We go anywhere there is a need. We're there, west, in, south, east, it doesn't matter. If there's a need, we're there, and we're still that way. We were blessed to find a location to house a lot of what we do. We found that location in 2022. And we are going to now open up what I was saying as a day service center. But our outreach will never change. You know, as long as we got the volunteer and the capacity to do it, we'll hit the streets anywhere from if someone says, hey, I'm moving. And to be honest, Ms. Deb, I don't know how I'm going to move. You know, I can't hire movers. I can't get a truck. You know, we'll raise funds to get a moving truck. We'll pay a couple of our neighbors to actually help another neighbor move. And I do refer to our houseless neighbors as our neighbors. You know, we work together as a family and as a community. We do porch drop-offs. We, yesterday, a family couldn't make it to our pantry. We have a free pantry in our building. They couldn't make it. That shouldn't be a reason you can't eat. So I told my operations manager, drop this off for them. You know, we make sure everybody gets what they need. There should not be that barrier of I can't get there. You know, we just now are getting funding for transportation where we can purchase bus passes or we can provide an Uber or Lyft. Baby, I've been Ubering and Lyfting since 2020 because I wanted to make sure our neighbors, if somebody got an appointment to go to, okay, let me order you an Uber. Let me order you a Lyft. Don't deny yourself just because, you know, someone says, hey, I couldn't make my appointment for my WIC or for my food stamp recertification. Baby's got to eat. And transportation issues are real. You know, we're not like, you know.
No way. Public transportation.
It's not the same here. I know we're growing that system, but even still, that is a system of exclusivity.
True.
That is not an inclusive mode of transportation. So it does become very hard to get to where you need to go. And especially on some of these time restraints that people are given to be at these appointments. So I tell people, I don't ever want that to be a problem. If I got to put you in my car, which I've done, and transport you myself, we're going to make it happen. But those are the barriers and stuff that we look at that have caused people to miss some of the things that they really, really need. And we're going to make sure we make it happen.
Excellent. Excellent. I love the work y'all guys are doing. It's needed. It's a very real and clear need down in Charlotte for that. Now, I do want to ask you, what do you need now to, you're already scaling up, but what are you looking, how are you looking to scale up? I mean, you're serving, how many clients or people that you serve on a regular basis right now?
So on a regular basis, we serve anywhere between 100 to 120. That's just right now. But our warmer months, we always see more. This will include those that we serve in-house because we do have a building now. All of our stuff used to be in warehouses, but storage units all throughout the city. We now have a one spot where everything is housed, and we're also able to do services here. We still do the outreach piece. We still take services to the street, but we offer services in here like housing navigation, mental health and wellness checkups, workforce development. Everything in-house is everything we do is free. We also do community pop-ups, which were birthed out of COVID and everything that was behind George Floyd and the decision. Because if you all don't know, in the city of Charlotte, there were a lot of protests that took place day and night. I promise you, this city was pretty much on fire. It was a lot that was going on in the midst of a pandemic. Once again, people have to eat. And one of the nights, one of the community grocery stores were destroyed. And so I told my team, listen, let's get out and take food to the streets. That day, we created a makeshift grocery store within a matter of hours. We provided a free meal of fish sandwiches from Weston Seafood, which is a historically Black-owned seafood restaurant right there in the hood. But we made sure everybody ate. We looked up. We had people dropping off Pampers, baby formula. Somebody bought flats of strawberries, bananas, toilet paper, paper towels. We were a brawny giant at the time. And so we had a plethora of paper towels. And I do use that word seriously. Like, we were overwhelmed with paper towels. We had AHA waters that had been donated. We had some Frito-Lays. And there were so many people that showed up probably just as many to give as there were to receive until the grocery store could be opened back. And we still use that model today. So on weekends, every second and fourth Saturday, we host a free grocery giveaway here. And that can easily be up to 100, 150 citizens that come through and rely on those free groceries. We are also registered with 2-on-1 services here in North Carolina. You can dial 2-on-1 and you can be referred to whatever houses resources are available in your city. So people will call on a daily basis and say, hey, you know, maybe their house is burnt down. They don't have any clothes or anything for the kids. You know, if we have it here, they can come and get it. Hey, I'm about to have a baby born and I can't leave the hospital without a car seat. You know, I know people have an issue with taking used car seats, but for us, if we got to get that mama and that baby from that hospital, we're going to get them buckled in safely, ask the fire department to meet us at the hospital to make sure that car seat is buckled in there correctly. And that mama is going to go home, hopefully to a home and not to a motel. And if she is going to a motel, we're going to raise money to make sure she doesn't have to worry about that motel fee for about 2 weeks. So for us, it's more.
That's
a lot
awesome.
Of all we do is feed. Man, we do so much more. And to put it into perspective, we just realized this ourselves. From 2020, March 8th of 2020, till now, we have served over 2 million meals.
With regards to people in need. But are you guys able to assess whether the individuals you're providing support to are U.S. citizens or undocumented individuals? So, like, are you able to determine if, because let's just say as U.S. citizens, in theory, right, there's other opportunities for employment, but we know things happen. But for, you know, immigrants where they're undocumented, it's oftentimes a challenge.
So what are you trying to say, Tuna? What are you trying to say? You're trying to say if they're immigrants, they shouldn't get paid?
No, that's not what I'm saying. Oh, that's what you thought I said? No, what I'm just trying to figure out. I'm trying to figure out if we're able to determine is it an immigrant? Is it an influx or a large quantity of immigrants where we know that it's a little bit more challenging to be able to not so much more challenging, but, you know, they're up against the green card. I mean, the green card and the citizenship status. Or is it just everyday American citizens that are unfortunately, you know, homeless and what have you?
I'm going to say,
let's just say in New York, right? There are a lot of different communities where you have a lot of support and you can tell it's a very high immigrant community or it's a high a combination of U.S. citizens and immigrants. So they're able to kind of, I don't want to say determine the source of the need, but you see where I'm going?
I'm going to say it like this. For us, it doesn't matter. You know, and I know a lot of people may look at that. A lot of people may immediately have concern. But for me, I don't see that. I'm built different, you know.
Yeah.
I really, when I say I'm built different, I literally am. I'm kind of like Planet Fitness. There's no judgment zone. So, you know, even if there's a language barrier, honey, I'm on my phone using Google Translate to try to figure it out. And we're able to speak and find out what their needs are. There's some great resources here. Including we've got our international house that is able to assist. We have Camino that is able to assist. We have the Latin American Coalition. So there's a lot of nonprofit agencies that assist us. But for us, when we're on that street, everybody's the same. Everybody's different. Every story is different. But as far as services and what I'm trying to do for them, because I get undocumented all the time and they like, you know, we just need work. Mm-hmm. Now we connect them to people and I tell them, if this gentleman comes and works for you, you better pay him just like any other citizen.
Yep.
We're not going to do that. You know, because I've had guys, got a couple of them now that have just recently come in from Colombia. They were working and when they would get to us, they would be so hungry. And I was like, oh my God, come to find out, no comer. They'll work them like That's dogs cool. and don't feed them all day. All day. They don't work and haven't been fed. So they come to me starving. I feed them. I'm like, y'all got to eat. And I said, and let me know who boss man, you know, because I want to know.
Track him down.
The person that did not feed you, you know, but those are the things. And then you get that safety, you get that trust, and then you get them opening up more. And then I can refer them to International House. then I can refer them to refugee services. But if they don't trust it, they're not going anywhere because they're fearing ICE or somebody else may show up. And I don't want them fleeing, you know, because some of them, we learned from one guy who were able to get his green card status and everything taken care of. This young man, he was forced into military at 10 years old, carrying a gun, killed his first person at age 12.
Wow.
He's here. I'm getting teary. I can't send him back. That's not right. That's not fair. Learned about his story when he left Tent City. And now this amazing man has built, even when a restaurant hired him, he explained to me, "Don't eat there, Miss Debbie." He said, "Man, you know how many of us they have packed in there working in this restaurant? And when we leave, it's like 10 of us in one room. And they take money from our paycheck and say they're paying us good. And if we eat anything off the, it's like a Chinese buffet. If we eat anything off the buffet, they charge us. No discount."
And it's like a catch-22 because you can't necessarily report, you know, them because it's their place of employment and they need to be employed. So you kind of need those employers that are willing to hire those that are in need. But it's kind of like, how do you make sure that they do right by people at the same time?
So I've been very professional on this call. Let me tell you, when I find out, I ain't professional. All bets are off. So when I roll up and my team roll up, we're going to roll up and let you know, you're dead wrong. This is not how we treat guys, people. We got to be different. You should treat somebody how you would want to be treated. And if you can't be a part of the solution, just get out of our way and let us do what we do. And we take them under our wings and we find something. With this gentleman, he started doing yard work. And from there, he created his own yard management system. And it has since grown. And he does some of the most beautiful landscaping. You know, he started landscaping in in Charlotte. And now he's landscaping in some of the richest neighborhoods and does an amazing, amazing job. And he has housing. And like I said, he has secured his green card. He is a fully working citizen giving back to the community. And that's what we want to see.
Yep.
That's awesome. That's very good. I want to turn it over to Bridget. Bridget, you have any questions for Deborah?